Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We've got good news. The world is open again, and people like you, people of faith, are traveling to Catholic sites around the world. Want to travel with exceptional Catholic leaders this fall, next year, or in the future? Are you looking to see specific sites, celebrate traditional Latin Mass, or travel to destinations without vaccine requirements? We are here to help you deepen your faith on pilgrimage. Give us a call at 1-800-842-4842 or visit us online at selectinternationaltours.com. Select International Tours is your pilgrimage company, and we have the perfect Catholic trip for you.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. If you think you may be too weak to withstand the manliness represented in the following program, please do yourself a favor and stop listening now. If you choose to continue in spite of this warning, if at any time you feel yourself overcome by the manliness, stop immediately and consult your closest medical professional. And now, for the not so fair, faint, or frilly, we present The Catholic Man Show.
Welcome to The Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. If this is your first time listening to The Catholic Man Show, this is a radio show slash podcast. If you're listening on the radio, make sure you go check us out on our website, thecatholicmanshow.com. You can also check out, while you're there, the pilgrimage that we're going to be going on in September to Ireland with Father Sean Donovan that is quickly approaching.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to Ireland even before that, here in a couple weeks.
That's awesome.
So I'll get to know the lay of the land.
You're going to preview the whole thing for us.
Right. That way I'll know, no, let's not go there. Let's go over here.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about that. So if you are listening on radio, make sure you go check us out on thecatholicmanshow.com. We are without Juan again this evening and without Jim, but we're going to manage.
We're recording on a Friday. That's a little
just all sorts of things that are against tradition.
Yeah, Juan and his bride are in Costa Rica for their anniversary, not their honeymoon, but
right. It's been a tough week here in Tulsa. We're recording on Friday because we were planning on recording on Wednesday. However, we had the shooting that happened at St. Francis Hospital. And because I'm the communications director of the diocese and the hospital is a Catholic hospital, I had some other things I had to take care of today.
Yeah.
So, or on Wednesday.
On Wednesday.
And yesterday and today. It's been a hectic week.
Uh-huh.
So pray for all those who, the four that lost their lives and the gunman
the
who
five,
lost,
yeah.
Yeah, and the gunman who lost his life and the families who are mourning the loss. It's been a tough week for Tulsa.
Yeah.
So I was very proud of our bishop, though. You know, it happened, and Bishop made his way to the hospital immediately.
He was there right away.
Along with several diocesan priests and the Sisters of Mercy. So it was really great to have, to be a public figure, you know, to show in a public way the support and being able to be pastoral to those in need immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So...
And, you know, like St. Francis being a Catholic hospital, they were able to have Mass.
Correct.
I think it's the next day for the victims and their families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we had a rosary at 3 p.m. today all across the Diocese of Tulsa. And then on Saturday, if you're listening to this, this would be live, this would be tomorrow, but on Saturday they're hosting a communal prayer service at the cathedral and inviting all people to join
at 7
p.m. So... I'm proud to work for the diocese. I'm proud to be a part of the diocese because I feel like that in a tragic moment, the leadership here in Tulsa is using it to try to bring people together, to be pastoral to those in need, and to be able to remind people to turn to Christ, because that's what we need. So
every day.
Every day, every minute, every second.
In the good times and in the bad times.
That's right. So,
and in the middle times.
Even the middle. Sometimes the middle times don't get thought of enough.
Right. Those too.
So anyway, so tonight, if this is your first time listening to the show, we typically have a drink. We start off with a drink and enjoy the fine things in life, such as a drink with a friend. And then we talk about either a gear. This evening, we're going to actually talk about something to take. We kind of switch, kind of going back and forth between gears and actions to do.
And then we haven't actually done a gear in a while, but I have some good man gear
coming up.
Good. Yeah.
And then we have a conversation. We just have a conversation between friends.
Talk about virtue. Really, this show is about living the virtuous life.
Yes.
And different ways to do that as a Catholic man in 2022.
Right. Dave and I have been best friends since we've been about 5 years old. And so we live across the street from each other now and run the Catholic radio station here in Tulsa and started this podcast radio show in 2016. So this evening we are drinking, this is an interesting one. It's a American whiskey. It's Old Elk. It is a straight bourbon whiskey. It's also barrel proof, so get ready.
All right.
It is the liquor store here in Tulsa, Aspen Liquor. They bought a barrel of it, and this is their barrel. Now, Old Elk is interesting distillery because they pride themselves on a slow alcohol proof process, is what they call it. So whenever they're proofing the alcohol, they're adding water to the whiskey to get the ABV where they want it to be, right?
Yeah.
Well, in big distilleries, big conglomerate distilleries, they dump, this is hundreds of thousands of gallons of water at a time. And what happens whenever when that process takes place is you sometimes lose some of the taste, some of the flavors that are in the whiskey because there's so much water being dumped in at once. And it's okay. A little bit more inconsistent in bottling. And so Old Elk takes...
Does it all get mixed at just the right ratios,
right,
when
exactly.
You're doing that much? Yeah,
It's hard for quality control. But Old Elk takes pride in the very limited and slow process of alcohol proofing to make sure that it's exactly where they want it to be. They say it's harder to obviously make production out of it, but they're very... very adamant that this is what helps make their whiskey what it is. So the notes on the whiskey, you just tried it, but the aroma is a sweet vanilla caramel, spicy clove, slight maple, and a nutty almond. The taste is a maple syrup, almond, raw bran, chocolate, deep wood, and coconut.
Yeah, I get a lot of oak.
Really?
Yeah.
It's like, well, wow, it's barrel proof, so
there's a lot of wood,
And then it's a smooth coating with a lasting flavor, a strong.
Yeah, no, it's got a good finish.
They also use four times the amount of malted barley as what most people do. So they're using barley, rye, and corn.
You can taste the rye. When you say that. Yeah, you can taste the rye.
The rye probably gives it that
a
kick.
little bite to it. Yeah, I like it.
So we're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
That's good. How old is it? Does it have an age statement?
It does not have an age statement.
Is it bonded? Does it say?
It is not.
So this is it's most likely a blend of different ages.
Mm-hmm.
How much was it?
Well, this one was a little bit more expensive because
it's barrel proof.
It's barrel proof, and it was a specific barrel that was bought by a liquor store here in Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was about $75.
Okay.
So.
I really want to join the Malt Whiskey Society. Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
My brother-in-law, Drew, he is a member now, and every time I go over there, he's got
new bottle,
a new bottle or two.
You can't get.
You can't get. Or you can, but you can't. All of theirs are barrel proof.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that you get through from them is barrel proof. And so it's just really interesting to say, oh, I've had this whiskey, but it didn't taste like this. You know, like this is the full. This
packs a punch.
Like this is full on. The flavor is just so much more because they're not watering it down. I mean, that's what they do. If you buy, you know, you go and you get a whiskey that's 80 proof, you know, in that range, they're just taking it out of the barrel and watering it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can sell a lot more bottles that way.
Sure. And it's also more palatable for most people.
Right, and exactly. That's it's not just about selling more. It's about creating a product that has the right, you know, balance for the average whiskey drinker.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer strong
this
flavors.
This is much different than the Willet we had last week with Deacon Garlic. You know, that Willet was so smooth, but it was also very sweet.
Yeah, it was. I really liked that.
Mm-hmm. But this is much more
this
packs
has,
a punch.
I mean, it does have a lot more raw flavor to it. Can you taste the wood? I mean, that was the first thing that jumped out at me. It's like, wow, that's got some oak.
Mm-hmm. So Old Elk, they're out of Colorado. Go check it out. I like it. I like it as a bourbon. All right. Yeah.
Not a bourbon. American whiskey.
American whiskey.
Right.
Bourbon. Yeah.
I also like it. Happy birthday, Adam.
Thank you. Yeah.
Adam is now 36 years old.
36 years old. 36 years young. One foot in the grave.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
Dude, you're going to be 40 so soon.
I know.
And I still have a long way to go.
You'll be 36 on the pilgrimage.
In months. Right. It's months away.
Three,
like a lot. Right. So it's a whole bunch of days.
Have we talked also about that our kids got confirmed?
No, I wanted to talk about that.
Okay, let's talk about that really fast. Like, so Elizabeth got received communion and got confirmed.
Her first communion and her confirmation and her first confirmation
and first confirmation the confirmation.
Right. Yeah.
And Luke and Jude both got confirmed, and Jude also received Holy Communion.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be doing some kind of trip.
It was an awesome day. I mean, it was like our small group of friends, like Henry, Henry received first communion.
My nephew.
And his confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know who Henry is, you know, he was born really, really early, you know, has a lot of challenges in life. And so it was so exciting.
But it's brought so many people to Christ.
Oh man. And Father was talking to him like, Henry, you know, you're going to receive the Holy Spirit today. And he just got this huge smile.
Grin on his face.
Oh, I almost cried when I saw that.
It was hard not to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it was just such an amazing weekend, grace-filled weekend. When we get back, we're going to talk about something that we pulled off also that was really fun.
I want to talk about it. It was awesome.
All right. We'll be right back. More than 60,000 men from around the world have journeyed through Exodus 90 together with their brothers. Priests, bishops, singled men, married men, Catholics, non-Catholics alike. One of the things we love receiving are emails from guys who signed up to do Exodus 90 through the Catholic Command Show and let us know how much freedom they've experienced once they go through the program. And it makes sense, right? Here's how it works. And these are the things that we talk about all the time on the Catholic Man Show, which is why we love promoting Exodus 90. They have three pillars, a pillar of prayer, a pillar of asceticism, and a pillar of fraternity. And through those three pillars, they help men grow closer to Christ, to their spouse, to their children, and to their friends. Closer to that man that God has called them to be. So go check out Exodus 90. They have Exodus 90 Lent as well. It's exodus90.com/TCMS for the Catholic Man Show. TCMS. Thank you to Exodus 90 for being a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. And that's it. We're here all by ourselves. This is like the old days, Adam.
Old days.
We used to do this all by ourselves all the time. And now, like, we've grown lax because I'm having to push these buttons. And
it took us a little while to get it set up.
You know, yeah, I sat there and I said, like, is it all ready? And then we realized, no, it's not ready.
Yeah.
Right. But anyway, we're here. We're drinking some Old Elk.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the distiller? There's a name here, Greg.
Yeah, that's a, it's his master distiller.
All right. It's really good. I like it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Thanks for bringing it to the table. So we wanted to, instead of talking about a man gear today, we wanted to talk about a community building
action. And I got to give you props. This is your idea. Not only was it your idea, you know, you're a big picture guy.
I'm a big picture guy.
You have ideas.
I'm not a CEO. I'm a president.
You, but the execution part of the ideas typically is not your.
I like to have other people. I like to delegate.
You're a very good delegator.
I'm a delegator.
You're a delegator. However, you had the idea, and then you also executed. And you executed well.
I was going to do the whole thing without telling you anything about it mm-hmm. until you just got an invitation on your door.
Right.
Because I wanted to, it's like, Adam is going to be blown away.
That I did all this.
But then I had, like, the location was actually right outside your house. Right. So there were three people I actually had to ask permission, and you were one of them.
Right.
So
what you did, we had a block party. Neighborhood block party.
It was so awesome.
Yeah. So, When you told me this, I was like, this is a great idea. This is, you know, back whenever we were young, we knew everybody on our street, right? Mm-hmm. At least the families. I mean, you may not have seen them all or hung out with them all, but you at least knew, that's Johnson's, that's the Miller's, that's the Smith's. Like, you could name everybody on your street.
Yeah.
And in today's world, for whatever reason, at least in our area, I couldn't do that in my neighborhood.
Oh, no. But you know who can? Your kids.
Right, because they're outside playing with them.
I was blown away. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was like, let's have a block party. I've always wanted to like go to a block party,
mm-hmm.
and I realized, well, I'll just have to throw the block party. Okay,
no one else is doing it, so I'm gonna have to do it myself.
It's gonna be great. And so we planned it. Really?
Okay, let's start off. Like, how did you? So we blocked off a street. So what did you do?
So I kept saying, oh yeah, let's do it. And then finally I said, okay, well, we got to do it. Let's make it Memorial Day weekend, right? Mm-hmm. Which was 2 weeks away at the time. So the first thing you got to do probably, you got to check your local area, but you might need a permit mm-hmm. from the city. In Broken Arrow, where we live, that was the case. But the Broken Arrow people were great to work with. It was so easy.
Mm-hmm.
They delivered roadblocks to my house. I just called them. It was like an online thing to fill out. It was no big deal. Mm-hmm. And so I submitted that, got a permit, got the roadblocks delivered. And then I just printed off invitations. I just made online, you know, just online an invitation, printed them off. So it was like four invitations on each page,
mm-hmm.
cut them in, you know, cut them up and got your boys and walked around the neighborhood, taping them onto doors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I realized, when walking around the neighborhood with them, they kept saying, oh, so-and-so lives here. So-and-so lives here. And I realized, you guys know everybody. I mean, not everybody, but right. Man, they knew 10 times as many people in the neighborhood as I do.
Uh-huh.
Because they are out playing with other kids, right?
Right.
And have met the parents kind of through the course of events.
Right.
You know?
Sure.
It was really great. Another thing that we did, which I think really helped, was we made a website.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds like a big
undertaking.
A big undertaking, and I assure you that it is not.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to oneandone.com.
Mm-hmm. Not sponsored.
Not sponsored. You can also go to GoDaddy. They do the same thing, but GoDaddy is going to charge you like an extra $3. It was like $4 to register the website. The website I registered, our neighborhood is Fairfax. I registered fairfaxblockparty.com.
Nice.
Okay, and all I did, and then I created a Google form
mm-hmm.
that is set up. They have a template on Google Forms
right.
that's a registration for a party. All I did was redirect fairfaxblockparty.com
mm-hmm.
to the Google form,
mm-hmm.
which has a long, obscure website, which is why we didn't want to drive people
to that.
Right? And so then they could go and say, yes, I'm coming. How many people? You know, ask them other questions. I had some other information on there, mm-hmm. like a screenshot of our neighborhood, like Google Maps,
mm-hmm.
where I highlighted this is where it's going to be. It was just basic stuff, inviting them, letting them know. And we got a couple, we got a sponsor, a guy who lives down the road from you, has a business. He sponsored the keg,
mm-hmm.
which is really great. Top Choice Roofing. Right. Shout out to Top Choice Roofing and Construction. And then another guy who lives a few houses down from me is a a musician by the name of Stephen Speaks, which a lot of people have probably heard of. He's like kind of a, especially back in the 90s when he was like
early 2000s.
Thank you. You know, like a Christian singer, and he's also put out some other
singer-songwriter,
like
type
not
of guy.
Not necessarily Christian songs, but good songs that have you know, pretty popular, really. So he came and played music. Basically,
we were at a bounce house for the kids.
Yeah,
through cornhole, like had a bunch of cornhole and things like that. For also we had like big bubble machines for the kids. Mm-hmm. We had sidewalk chalk. We had
face painting.
Your wife did face painting.
Face painting turns out is so easy. All you do is get hot water and take some colored pencils and let the tips of the colored pencils soak in hot water.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can just draw on faces with them. And it looks incredible.
Nice.
I mean, it was.
I didn't know that's how she did
it. That's all we did. So it's like you don't have to go get paint and practice about with a brush and stuff. When you just have the colored pencils, it makes it so easy to actually do
and
that.
And we asked everybody, you know, to bring a side if they wanted to.
And that's the thing is about getting community participation. You don't have to. It's not like one person has to organize everything, right? Because on the invitation, I said, hey, bring a game if you want. And we had a couple people bring, you know, different things. But yeah, we had a few cornhole games. We had the bounce house for the kids and. Mm-hmm.
Somebody brought a big jump rope, so the kids were able to jump rope together.
That was us. We brought that.
Oh, you did that?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know you had that big jump rope.
Yeah, dude.
Sweet.
We have a big jump rope.
Nice.
Which isn't very good most of the time. You're like, most of the time you can't, but it was awesome. It was so much fun. So there's 140 houses in our like little neighborhood. In our like section of the neighborhood that we were inviting. And we had about 108, 108 register that they were coming. And I think we had a few more than that come just to hang out.
Yeah, it was great because you got a chance to talk to people. You got to see them face to face. You also got a chance to meet the parents of maybe some of the kids that your kids are playing with.
Right.
Which is very important, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so that way you have a face with a name.
I met a couple that I see at the gym all the time. I didn't know they lived in our neighborhood. In fact, they live four houses down from me.
That's embarrassing.
Well, I never see them four houses down. Four houses is a long way,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
But I see them, like three times a week at the gym, you know, all the time.
We also grilled a bunch of hamburgers.
Yep.
And so it was great to also see the look on everybody's face whenever you said, okay, we're going to pray before a meal.
Did you notice what I did? I basically did the Bless Us, O Lord prayer, except I just changed the words a little bit so it didn't sound like Bless Us, O Lord, and these thy gifts.
Yeah.
I said, like, Lord, we ask you to bless us for the gifts that you've given us, everything, you know, the food
Our family.
Everything is a gift from you that, you know, we're going to be receiving. And we ask this through your son, Jesus. Amen. I mean,
right.
I was just trying to take that prayer and
right.
just make it a little bit more vernacular.
Yeah.
But it was just awesome. Like there was one moment where I oversaw where two people were talking and introducing and they said, oh, you're the new neighbor. And he said, yeah, I am. And I was thinking, this is it. This is the moment I wanted right here. You know,
I invited a couple of people to church.
You did.
Mm-hmm.
I had invited our pastor. He wasn't able to come.
Right.
But
that would have been great.
Yeah. So I did invite him, but, he just wasn't able to make it.
I just think that, in today's world, when we're constantly being, you know, it's fast paced, we're on our cell phones a lot. Like we gotta be more intentional about being not only outside, but being with, the community, like having community events,
right?
And the normal modes of community in today's world have diminished compared to, you know, back whenever we were kids. You know, most people would go to church, and that community would happen.
Yeah,
and most people did have, you know, kids in sports or something like that, where you would have that opportunity to have that community, and those are dwindling.
Yeah, and it really was not hard to do. It was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. And especially if you get a couple neighbors, you say, okay, you're in charge of like yard games, lawn games. Mm-hmm. You're in charge of activities for the kids. You know, and you don't need a lot. Okay? You don't feel like I was like looking up, oh, what, you know, best things to do at a block party. And there's just all the stuff, bike parades and like all these different activities where it was kind of like almost there was a schedule. And, oh, at 7 o'clock, we're going to do this. And at this time, we're going to do that. And, you know, that could be cool, too. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to do that. Right?
Because the idea is to just get people together so they can talk.
Get them together so that the kids, first of all, you don't actually need to arrange things for the kids. The kids will take care of themselves, right? And then just get people together, spread it out, you know, make it a community event where everybody brings a little bit to the table.
And ultimately, whenever you do that, you create, you know, friendships, you create opportunities to evangelize.
Amen.
So
it was really fun.
Well done. I'm proud of you.
July 1st, be a great opportunity for a block party.
There you go.
If you do it, send us a picture.
That'd be awesome. We'll be right back. Mark Lozano over at Christ Center Capital is doing something absolutely crazy. We talked about it. He said, this is something I want to do. I said, okay, if that's what you want to do, let's move forward. Let's do it. 50 people, the next 50 people who sign up using promo code TCMS2022, that's TCMS2022 over at ChristCenterCapital.com gets an absolutely free subscription to Christ Center Capital. Christ Center Capital is a watchdog site for Judeo-Christian investors. So if you're looking to put your money in an ethical way and get sound advice from Mark Lozano, go to ChristCenteredCapital.com. Use promo code TCMS2022. The first 50 people who do so get a free subscription. We want to thank Mark Lozano and Christ Center Capital for being a sponsor of The Catholic Man Show. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Drinking a little bit of Old Elk. Just got done talking about the epic block party that we threw. I want to talk a little bit about, talk this evening about communication.
Okay. You are the communication director for the Diocese of Tulsa in Eastern Oklahoma.
That's correct. But I think as men in business, there's always opportunities to get better at communicating, right? Whether it's via email, whether it's you have to give a business presentation, whether you have to give a sure. talk at your church, you know, whatever it is, we always have opportunities to get better at communicating. And
right, communicating more effectively.
And efficiently. Effectively, yeah. Efficiently, productively, mm-hmm. All those Lees.
Yes, all the adverbs.
And so I was...
Mr. Communication Director, those are called adverbs.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
They describe a verb.
Typically.
Yeah.
Always.
I think always.
So I wanted to go back through and review some old speeches, old writings that were epic, right? And I wanted to see if, obviously, people have been dissecting good speeches. How are they good? Why are they good? You know, what makes them good? How yeah. are they received? Mm-hmm. And there's a lady who did, her name is Nancy Duarte.
Okay.
And she reviewed a lot. She's a communicator. She reviewed a lot of different speeches throughout history and thought, okay, there's a reason why they're good. What makes them good? And if there's a formula to make them good, we should be able to watch or listen to multiple different speeches, and they should overlap in a way of this is the formula that makes them good.
Yeah, something consistent.
Something consistent. And so she said she reviewed the I Have a Dream speech.
Great speech.
And she also reviewed Steve Jobs' speech of announcing the iPhone.
Okay.
Two things, you know.
Less familiar with that one, but.
But both monumental.
Okay, yeah.
You know, obviously the I Have a Dream speech is much, much more. But,
You know, King Jr., anything he would say, he could read a terrible speech, but it would still sound really so awesome.
Right. And so what she said
was the very the underlying like consistent thing about these speeches is they all started with here's the current situation, and then they would give a here's what it could be, and they would always try to make the current situation and here's what it could be have a, the biggest gap possible. So they would
interesting.
So they would talk about here's where we are, but here's what if we did this here's where we could be.
Uh-huh.
And then you'd hang out there for a little bit. And then you would come back to here's where we are again. And then here's where we could be. And you would go back and forth, volleying back between the present state and then here's what the future could have. Like, here's where we could be. If we could figure out the problem if we did this. You know, we would change the world if we did this. And here's how grandiose this future would be if we achieved this, you know, this goal.
Yeah.
And it would volley back and forth. And then it would end on this strong call to action for the future. So the strong, like, here's what we, so now it's the battle. It's the battle cry. It's like, let's go into battle and with fortitude and change the world.
Yeah.
And so she did this, and she overlapped all these speeches. She did. It was really interesting because she overlaid. She made these peaks and valleys of here's the speech. And if you overlay them and you make these peaks and valleys and you see them side by side, they're very, very consistent.
Really?
Yeah, very comparable. And so it was just very interesting that this is how a lot of the communicators, you know, in the last at least 100 years have been communicating. And so then I said, okay, well, if that's how they're, you know, if that's how they were, they have been doing it, how did they used to do it before you were able to give, you know, graphics and PowerPoints, which is the death of all of all speeches.
Yeah.
But you know, before they had these visual stimulants that you could use in your speeches, how did they used to do it?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that Deacon Harrison Garlick gave me when I first became the communications director, which I was very grateful for, was his notes on Cicero when he's talking about how he gives speeches.
Because
his rhetoric.
He is like the greatest speech giver of all times.
Right. And so it was really great to be able to go through it because then I tried to, I was reading through the book one and book two of this.
Uh-huh.
I think it's four books, but book one and two, to understand how did he used to do it? How did he captivate? Mm-hmm. How is he throughout all of time still the model of effective communicating,
mm-hmm.
effectively communicating? And so he used, there's three branches basically of rhetoric, which is very like Christian as well.
Yeah, I mean, let's just stop and say that there used to be like a category of study called rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be something that people, if you were educated, then you would study rhetoric. But this idea of how to present your ideas persuasively, eloquently, you know, in a way that would convince other people.
Right.
And we don't do that anymore.
No, I mean, that's the classical education when you go through
uh-huh.
that is making a revival. But
think about how important that is, because persuading hasn't, that's not like that's out of style. You know, we still today need those skills just as much as ever
mm-hmm.
about, hey, I'm going to present my side of the issue in a clear way so that's people understand what I'm saying. They understand what I'm not saying
mm-hmm.
Concisely, so it doesn't take me forever, right? I don't lose people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
We should bring it back. We got to bring it back.
Well, that's why we're trying to homeschool and trying to do that.
Classical stuff. The classics.
So he talks about that there's three branches of rhetoric, the ethos, the pathos, and the logos.
I like the last one.
Yes. And so, you know, the logos being logic, reason. The ethos is appealing to authority. The credibility of the author, ethical aspects of your speech, and then the pathos is obviously like the emotion, like appealing to emotion. And so Cicero basically gives five different canons of rhetoric.
Five canons?
Yeah, that's what he calls it. And this is what I think...
Like categories? Is that what...
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, like categories. And this is what I think... if you are preparing a speech, if you're preparing... maybe even writing a book, or you're preparing like a long email that you have to write, something like that. This is what I think. This is a good blueprint for you.
Okay.
So he breaks down into five things: invention, arrangement, expression, memory, and delivery. Now this is obviously for a speech, but I think you can also utilize this in other aspects as well. So invention is like, so you put all your ideas together that could be plausible to what you're trying to convey. Put them all together, and this is really good if you have like a whiteboard or something like that in your office.
This is like the content,
sort of. Yeah, this is kind of like brainstorming, trying to get everything out.
Okay.
And then he says you got to arrange it. So you arrange it in a fitting, proper order. Okay, so like right. You have all your ideas, you have your brainstorming ideas. Okay, now that I have those, I need to break it down into
what steps.
Into a fitting order that makes a logical sense.
Uh-huh.
And then expression, meaning like how do I verbalize this? How do I communicate this to other people? So am I going to be more appealing to the emotion side? When am I going to be appealing to emotion?
Right.
When am I going to be appealing to logic? When am I going to be appealing to authority? And so you have the understanding of when you're going to do that throughout the speech.
Uh-huh.
And then it's memory. So it's saying like you have a firm mental grasp of what the speech looks like. The picture that you're painting, like how is it going to flow? You have it memorized. Like I don't think he really means
not
like
memorized,
but just understanding the flow of the content.
Mm-hmm. Although he may have memorized, you know, back in the day they used to memorize all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There was just a skill that they were more practiced in doing.
Right, and then he said. Then he talks about the delivery aspect, which is the delivery is the most important part.
Right. It's all of those things put together.
Right. It's almost like that Seinfeld episode when he says, you can hold the reservation.
No, you can take the reservation,
but you can't hold the reservation. Really, holding the reservation is the most important part. So he says like the delivery aspect of this is very important. This is like understanding who your audience is.
Does he say to pound on the table?
Like Dwight Schrute.
Yeah, like Dwight Schrute.
He does not
shake your hands in the air.
They do use a lot of motion in their speech giving. But understanding your audience is very important. In fact, he talked about how, now, this is not something that I recommend doing, but he talks about how emotion is the most important part. If you can appeal to emotion, facts.
Totally.
Facts do not matter. Mm-hmm. You just got to appeal to emotion.
I mean, if you want to convince somebody...
You appeal to emotion.
Really, if you want to convince the average person, just fill your speech with logical fallacy after logical fallacy. They are so persuasive. You know, like
and people can't
like,
see them.
Just go ad hominem. You know, poisoning the well. Just like just keep dropping them. You know, post hoc ergo propter hoc.
Yeah,
and just one after the other, and you will just absolutely convince most people.
Right. Yeah, so he would like even Cicero would give like speeches, and whenever he was giving speeches or even like in trials, he would bring the person up, which was not common that time. It's like not how it is in today's uh-huh. law.
Look at him.
But look at him. Like, how could you think that this man?
Look at this man.
Right.
What a brilliant move.
So he used a lot of props, meaning like mostly people
uh-huh.
or statues. He used Jupiter as one, like a new sculpted Jupiter was there, and he's like, how could we be defaming Jupiter here today, you know, with this here. Conversation,
uh-huh.
you know, in his statue. So anyway, we'll keep this conversation going on the other side of the break. We'll be right back. Hey, I'm Adam Minahan, and this is David Niles from the Catholic Man Show.
And we are so excited because we are going on pilgrimage to Ireland. We're going this September, September 15th through the 24th. We're going to go to some amazing Catholic places in the country. As you know, the Catholic tradition in Ireland is so deep and rich. And while we're there, we're also going to be visiting some distilleries, if you can even imagine that, you know, us, the Catholic Man Show. So we're going on basically a cathedral and distillery pilgrimage to Ireland. It's going to be awesome.
And because we're going on distillery tours that are not typical for the tourist, Dave, we're not taking a bunch of people. We're not taking 60 people. We're not taking 50 people. We're capping this off at 30 people because we want to be able to We want it to be intimate. We want it to be able to go to places that normal tourists don't get a chance to go to. So go to selectinternationaltours.com/Catholic Man Show for more information.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. We're talking about Cicero and his rhetoric, his approach to rhetoric, which I'm guessing he pioneered. I mean, he actually wrote down a lot of these things. So he was so good at it that people wanted to know his steps, his method.
Yeah, he gave a blueprint. So let me ask you this. So whenever you have to write an email to your boss or to an important client, do you have a system that you use when you're writing emails?
You know, not really, because I'm more of a phone call guy. Like, I have phone calls with clients all the time. My emails are typically following up from a phone, from a conversation.
From a phone call.
So it's, I'm not laying out new information, you know, I'm maybe, hey, you know, I said I was going to get back to you about this one thing, you know, here I looked into it, whatever. So they're usually very short.
Well, when I was going,
When
I was going through and I was listening, or I was reading what Cicero says about the five canons of rhetoric, invention, arrangement, expression, memory, and delivery, I actually was somewhat pleasantly surprised because it made me think of how we write our speech, we write our talks. Like when we go out and give talks to, at men's conferences or other, you know, a variety of conferences, we actually, unknowing about this, at least for me, we really do this. How we write talks, Dave, is you and I, we'll get together and we say, okay, what's this talk about? It's about fatherhood. Okay. Now, what do we want to convey about fatherhood?
Yeah.
And then you and I just start...
Broad to specific,
right,
baby.
We just like start throwing broad, out ideas.
Broad to specific. Definitions. So let's start with some definitions.
Right. So we throw out all these ideas and then we arrange it and say, okay, so we're talking about fatherhood. So what does a father do? But he protects, provides, and establishes. Okay, so those should be, you know, a system that we use. And then, you know... then we kind of throw in the expression aspect of like, okay, well, here, you know, you can throw a joke in here. I'll throw a joke in later. You know, and then we rehearse it several times to where we understand where we're going to go, and then we deliver it. You know, so I was really actually kind of impressed.
And the last few times we rehearse it, it's gets to be where it's, okay, pretty much the same.
Right.
And at this point, you know, we've done enough times where we kind of already know how it's going to go.
Right, but that's how we write. I mean, that's how we write our talks.
Right.
And so I was actually looking through that and being like, sweet.
We do not script a talk.
No, we bullet point.
We bullet point a talk.
Mm-hmm.
But it ends up being kind of scripted because we've run through it enough times.
And we understand each other.
It's like, all right, you do this bullet, I do the next bullet. And we end up saying kind of the same thing and finding a groove that works.
One of the things that Cicero really talks about also is like when you're starting, find common ground with your interlocutor. So one of the things that Deacon Garlick told me, like when gave me advice when I first started as a communications director, you know, there's a lot of things that you have to do. You have to write press releases. You have to, you know, email different people who may be disgruntled about the church, or, you know, there's a lot of different situations where you have to find common. It's kind of tough to find common ground, and a lot of times you're in the right, they're in the wrong, and all you want to do is just blast them for it,
right?
You know, and list the reasons why they're wrong.
Quit wasting my time with your petty complaint,
right? But you know, that's not what that's not how you gain.
Yeah,
you know, that's not how you bring people closer to Christ.
Yeah, altar rails are great. Okay, I don't know why you're sending me an email complaining about them.
That didn't happen, but
yeah, I'm making that up. But right. If that would happen,
I could hypothetically see that happening. Yes. Yeah. So he told me, he said, okay, so when you start an email or when you start a talk or anything else, find common ground. You always start and end in a positive situation.
a positive tone, even if it's a negative thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
sort of like the power of the positive yes.
Yes, very, very much so.
Uh-huh.
You know, you start off. So, you, when you're think about it, when you're writing a business, you know, your one of your coworkers is just giving you, you know, grief, and you guys are not on the same page. But you need to write this email to your, you know, your team. You start off by finding something positive. Like, yes, I agree that we all need to make sure we complete this mission. We all need to complete this project.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all agree that we all want to complete this project. And then you list very specifically where either the differences are or where we're on the same page.
Yeah.
So that way it's very laid out, articulately understanding bullet point by bullet point. Here's where the differences are. And then make sure you're ending the email or ending the conversation with a positive again. So I think that if we can get through these bullet points, that we can make this thing happen.
Yeah.
And so then I thought, oh, that's exactly, you know, how the speeches that were written that we talked about earlier in the last break, that's very similar to how they start off. They write these speeches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have the current situation. Then they, if we can accomplish this, then think about where we would be. Mm-hmm. But here we are,
are the differences.
If we overcome this hurdle, then we could be completing this project, you know, or landing this client or whatever it is.
Yeah,
and going back and forth to what is right now and what could possibly be. And that was just something when he was chatting with me about it, I really appreciated it. And that was something that was beneficial. It's like very common sense, but if you're not used to maybe writing emails, if you're just not maybe starting the workforce and you don't, you know, maybe you haven't had much experience with it, it was very good advice.
Mm-hmm. Is there a book or something about this, or like a essay that someone has put together about Cicero's approach here? That, because these are Deacon's notes, but you don't know if it's like,
well, this is his notes on Cicero's book. This is his notes that he made.
Okay, so actually it's on Cicero. So the book.
The book, yeah.
Where Cicero put out this.
Yeah, a day invention. It's like The Invention is what it's called. The Invention.
The Invention by mm-hmm. Cicero.
Mm-hmm. Day.
Hope you read Latin.
Yeah. So anyway, like I thought that was very beneficial in not only. So then I thought, okay, that's very beneficial in the professional realm. But then I thought, this is the art of rhetoric, even in the Christian world. You know, when you're talking to somebody who's not Catholic, you got to find common ground first. Mm-hmm. You're talking to a Protestant, it's like, yes, we both believe that Jesus Christ is our Lord and Savior, and that the Bible is the holy word of God. Good, we're on the same page there.
Mm-hmm.
Now here's where we're not on the same page, but if we got on the same page, then we would all be part of the one body of Christ that Jesus prayed right before he entered into his passion, that we would all be one. And so, but right now, here's where we are, because here's our differences in the Eucharist, in confession, in the variety of sacraments and the hierarchy, whatever it is. But if we didn't, you know, if we came together there, think about how we would set the world on fire, baptizing all the nations in the name mm-hmm. of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, like Jesus asked us to do, like commissioned us to do.
Yeah,
you know, and so I started thinking, like, how many times have I missed that opportunity when I'm talking to people about the Catholic faith, because I was too tempted to say, like, here's the seven reasons why you're wrong,
mm-hmm.
and then list all seven, you know, and then be like, because of this,
and list them as forcefully as possible,
right? Yeah, and just beat them, them over,
hammer,
yeah,
take that,
and so I just thought. I just was reflecting upon the times that I used my rhetoric poorly to evangelize, and then also obviously times where I used rhetoric poorly in business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that it's a lot different today, because obviously when Cicero was doing this, everything was oral, mm-hmm. and you were given time to give a speech. Right, mm-hmm. and then somebody else would give us, you know, a counter speech or something.
Mm-hmm.
And giving a speech is a total, you know, the medium is the message, and in a speech you can have pauses, you can modulate your voice. You know, are you angry? Are you compassionate?
Mm-hmm.
Are you sad? Are you happy? You know, like those things do not come through in an email,
mm-hmm.
And so you have to change, you know, obviously all that has to change when you're writing.
Right.
And knowing your audience is key there.
Totally. Yeah, totally. Because you can't, like, you know, you there's no sarcasm font.
Right.
I know, like, people have talked about making one. I would totally be down for a sarcasm font, right?
If we come up with one, yeah.
Right. But, so, you have to, you can't just take these principles and, boom, put them into an email, because that's not, it's a different message.
Right.
You know?
One thing that I really enjoyed, I have the master class. Have you heard of these? You know, the master class series. And his name is Voss. I think it's Chris Voss. Chris Voss, he's a professional negotiator. He's done all these negotiations with hostages and things like that. And he gives this.
What a crazy job.
Oh, it's incredible. It's going to be incredibly stressful. But he talks about how it's some of his tactics that he uses. And I use them to this day. Mm-hmm. When somebody's talking, they're telling you about something that you're not really sure how to answer, you're not sure how to respond, you need actually more time to think, they'll finish a sentence, and it's called mirroring tactic. Mm-hmm. So you basically repeat the last three or four words that they say, kind of in a question form. So, like, say something like, you talk about...
Look, I need $1,000.
You need $1,000?
That's what I said.
And then, like, you just stop and pause, and it... Because of the communication, they feel like, oh, well, I guess I got to keep explaining why I need $1,000. You know, and so then they go on and say, well, yeah, I need $1,000 because I got a car payment to pay. You have a car payment? Yeah, I don't own the car.
This is about your car?
Yeah, and so, you know, you just kind of mirror what they're talking about, and it gives you not only time to think about, you know, how you're going to approach, but it also gives emotions the opportunity to settle down.
You
got to
be careful,
down.
Though, because sometimes someone might think, are you mocking me? You know, like,
no, but, I mean,
you can't do it too much.
Right, right. Yeah, you can't just over and over and over again, but it gives you time to utilize. So when if you're listening on the radio, go check us out on the podcast. We'll continue this conversation over there on the podcast. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers. But I actually use this very often.
There's another type of mirroring that I'm familiar with where basically... You just adopt the attitude and disposition of your interlocutor.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Where, oh, they're crossing their arms, I'm crossing my arms.
You play the Andy Bernard?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, but that's a...
How am I going to get out of this therapy? He says something like, mirroring everybody, you know, I forget his whole, like, but he's basically like saying, like, basically, I'm just going to copy everybody.
Right.
What they're doing.
If you're feeling good, I'm feeling good.
Right.
You know, if you're complaining, so am I.
Right.
And there is, I mean, it's been
mirroring personalities. And,
right. It's been proven that if you do that with a person, they tend to like you. Like,
right.
You know what? Something about this guy I just really like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because he's just being you. You know?
Right. Well, and you know, a lot of people just love to talk.
Uh-huh.
And so if you just allow them to and give them a little bit more of a reason to talk, especially on something that they're passionate about. Right. So I use this a lot whenever I'm speaking with academics or something, and I don't know really the subject very well, and they're talking about it, you know, a specific topic, and I use mirroring a lot, but I've practiced it enough to where it doesn't come off as I'm, you know, making fun of them, but more that I'm more interested in, like, well hold on, I don't really understand what you mean by that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they feel like that they have to keep explaining it.
Right. This is a really good like thing for a first date where people naturally have a tendency in conversation, especially if it's a one-on-one conversation, to tell parallel stories. And because, oh, I have something about that I can tell you. But it's actually a selfish thing to do and doesn't really progress like a conversation very well. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, if I ask you, you know, what'd you do first, whatever. It's like, oh, you tell me a story about going to a beach. And
the
first thing is like, oh, I went to a beach one time. Let me tell you about when I was 7 and I went to a beach, which actually has nothing to do with, you know, like if you're on a...
Prudence plays a big role here.
Right. If you're on a first date, what you need to do is resist that temptation to tell your stories and ask questions about their story.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Try to talk about yourself very little on the first date. Mm-hmm. Not that like you're, oh, I'm going to keep... If they ask you, yeah, like if they ask you a question, you know, tell them. Right. But you're not hiding information about yourself. But if you want that person to feel like you are an engaging person, a caring person, if you sit there and just ask them questions about, oh, no kidding, what was that like? Just ask them questions mm-hmm. about the things that they're saying mm-hmm. and get them to be the one talking all the time. They will leave. And this isn't not just a first date, but conversations in general. Mm-hmm. If you, in your conversations, get the other person to do most of the talking, then they're going to walk away from that conversation going, man, that guy is awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, he's such a great guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is about him. I just like that guy.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's very difficult in today's world is we're really bad at regulating our emotions. We make the most mistakes when our emotions are high. Mm-hmm. We regret our decisions of what we've done when our emotions are high. And so using some of these tactics really give you the opportunity to temper your emotions and make more prudent decisions.
Yeah.
One of the other things that I use a lot of times is making sure that I understand. So if you tell me something, I kind of repeat what you say. So let me just make sure. So I think what you're saying is, and then repeat what they're saying. Uh-huh. And so it just gives you more time.
Especially in a contentious conversation, because it makes the other person feel validated.
Right.
Like, okay, yes. When you say, what I'm hearing you say is this and this and this, and it makes you feel like this. When the other person says, yes, that is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. They feel good now that they feel understood.
And they feel heard.
Right, exactly. That's definitely, they feel validated, mm-hmm. right, in their stance, whatever it is, even if it's totally wrong.
Right.
At least they know that you've been listening.
Right. And so I use both of these things a lot. So I use mirroring a lot, and I use the, so are you saying this? Mm-hmm. And if I want to kind of persuade them, then I say, it seems like what you're saying is this, and I kind of lead them down this, mm-hmm. this road to make sure.
But it's also helpful because sometimes you think you understand what they're saying, and then you realize you don't know what you don't understand what they're saying.
Right,
and you just saves, you know, like the conversation was about to stall out. You know, you're going to respond in a way, and you're going to end up wasting 5 minutes before you realize, oh, I thought you were saying something else. You know, right.
Absolutely. Another thing that's something that my mom taught me that I have carried on. She just hammered this into us when we were young. Mm-hmm. And I've used it to this day, is kill them with kindness. Mm-hmm. It is very hard to be mean or aggressive towards somebody who is always nice to you.
Right.
And as Christians, you know, we're called to love everybody. This whole understanding of like what love is and like how we're supposed to be called to love everybody is like, I think what that really means is just kill them with kindness.
Yeah. It means like, it doesn't mean like, oh, I love you.
I validate exactly what you're doing.
Right. Just means to be charitable.
But I'm just being charitable to you. Constantly. Like
recognize their dignity.
All the time. Mm-hmm. And so I use that constantly of smiling. Like, you know, if you can try to be, if smiling becomes part of your reality, if smiling becomes part of how you carry yourself, it's very hard for people to be mean to you. It's very hard for people to be have something like an issue with you. I think the evangelization really starts can start with just a smile.
Totally.
Because it's how you carry yourself. It's like there's something, you know, it's that whole First Peter 3:15, like what's that hope that's within you?
Always be
you?
Ready to give, yeah, an explanation for the hope
that's within you. It's like it's saying that they've already recognized there's some kind of hope within
right.
you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you're the Catholic in the office, but you're always grumpy.
Or you're a Debbie Downer.
Right. I mean, people are going to transpose you onto the things that are about you. Like, oh, he's Catholic. He's totally the worst. Mm-hmm.
But if you can always be, you know, and you can say like, well, that's just your disposition.
That's an excuse.
It's an excuse. You can, like, you get to choose. You have a free will. You can choose to be happy. You can choose to be right. Have a smile.
There's no temperament that's just, oh, you're that temperament, so you just get to be mean all the time. You know, like, you get to be in a bad mood.
Right.
No, you don't. Don't give me, like, I'm melancholic. It's like, get out of here.
Right.
Well, why don't you, like, quit being selfish? And I have found that this a smile helps you be more grateful for everything that, you know, the reality around you.
Totally. I mean, so once again, it comes back to your prayer life. You know, it's just so funny how your prayer life in the Christian life, living it,
it's almost like the oxygen
always comes back to your prayer life, right?
It's so almost like the oxygen. If you have a good spiritual life,
right? No, totally. If you have a good, a strong prayer life, then the worst thing can happen to you, and you don't lose your peace over it, you know, because you're grounded, and so you can maintain the right disposition in your day-to-day life. And most of the time, the worst thing's not going to be happening to you, right? And so you're going to be able to, you're prepared, you're ready to have joy. People are going to see the hope.
Right.
And so, and it just, in the business world too, it just gives you a credibility.
It does.
I mean, it makes you more credible. That.
And people tend to go to you for, you know, counsel because it's like, well, you seem to be happy all the time. So let me figure out what you're doing.
Right.
And that gives you the opportunity to show, here's why I'm happy. It's because I have Jesus.
Right.
I have a relationship with Jesus.
If you want to know,
right,
there's a dude. He was the dude of dudes.
And he loves you incredibly and wants to have a relationship with you.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I just think that none of the things that we said tonight are revolutionary, obviously. As
well, they're, typical. You know, thousands of years old.
Right. Right. But it's good to go back to the basics sometimes and remember, like, how am I carrying myself? Am I smiling? Am I happy? How am I communicating to other people? Am I effectively communicating? Do I have my ideas in order? You know, am I evangelizing the best I can? Like, how should I be doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to the drawing board. And I just think that, you know, I think that if we do that, if we take a step back. What are you doing? Think about it.
Think of stop what you're doing and think.
And think.
Stop and think of what you're doing. Yeah. But we need effective communication today. Like, I want to say more than ever. I haven't been around ever. But there are a lot of stupid ideas that are so popular.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about basic fundamental things like a man. What is a man? What is a woman?
Right.
Like the fact that you have to be a biologist to like,
have you seen,
say
the,
what a woman is?
What like, is a woman? Have you seen that Matt Walsh documentary yet?
No.
He came out with this. I don't know if you are aware of this, but he just came out with a documentary. It's called What is a Woman? And he goes around all the world asking this question for people to answer.
Yeah.
And he interviews, you know, all these people who have doctors who give.
Dude, it's a mystery, okay? We don't know what a woman is.
Right. He's going to the women's marches. He goes over to Africa and like these tribal areas asking them what is a woman, and they give clear answers. He goes, what if a man wants to be a woman? And they look at him like, that doesn't make sense. Like, it's like not computing. What do you mean by this? You know, and so, I mean, he goes around all around the world asking people, what is a woman? Politicians, all these things, you know, and it's just funny to see the reaction. Like, we are to the point in this world where there are some who cannot define what a woman is.
And you know what's funny is that the people who won't define a woman, what a woman is, they're not stupid. They know exactly what a woman is. They know that they're just having to say this because of the agenda, right? It's just absolutely ridiculous that we have got to the place where we value this agenda
right
more than just recognizing basic, like, what could be more basic than like, this is a woman, this is a man,
right?
If you can't say what a woman is and what a man is, then what can you say?
But
is there anything,
right?
Are you alive,
right?
I mean, it's like all of a sudden now it's, you know, just the hermeneutic of suspicion for everything. We don't know. The whole world might be dreamed up. I mean, it's just like, great. Well, you just go live in fairyland.
Right.
Sometimes it makes me feel like, you know what? I'm not going to argue with you. I'm just going to leave you to your own devices. I'm going to shake
devices or vices.
Yeah, very good. I'm going to just shake the dust from my feet and say, like, good luck. If you need me, I'll be over there in regular person world.
In the truth.
Yeah, I'll just like
I'll be set free because the truth sets you free.
I'm going to be over there doing my thing like a regular person. The fear is, though, that the crazies, it's not enough that you leave them alone, right? You have to be crazy too.
Right.
Or we'll come for you.
Or you become the crazy.
You're canceled.
Right.
They'll, you know, like, anyway, it's not what we're talking about today, but.
I don't really have much
But we
else.
Need good rhetoric so that we can.
And we need to teach our children good rhetoric so they can spot fallacies. So they
That's
can
right.
They can be able to combat what the world's pushing mm-hmm. around. So that's kind of, I don't really have
Very
much
good.
Else. Do you
Very
have anything
good.
Else you want to?
No, indeed.
No, indeed.
No, indeed. It's positive, negative.
Start with a positive and end with a negative.
I guess it'd be a negative positive, but it's both.
Where we are, where we could be.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Hi, this is Bishop David Kondrla of the Diocese of Tulsa in Oklahoma. So let us pray. Remember, O most gracious Virgin Mary, that never was it known that anyone who fled to thy protection, implored thy help, or sought thy intercession was left unaided. Inspired with this confidence, I fly to thee, O Virgin of Virgins, my Mother. To thee do I come. Before thee I stand, sinful and sorrowful. O Mother of the Word incarnate, despise not my petitions, but in thy mercy hear and answer me. Amen.